She's like a bomb, but still you light the fuse. And I guess I did the same, cause I remember she's a good way to get the blues. She'll make you think that you're her only man. She'll lead you on, take everything she can. But if I had to pick a heartache, she'd be the one I'd choose. Cause if you're gonna have to get them, she's a good way to get the blues. A good way to get the blues.
Wake up call on WNRN. The wake up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now, your host, Rick Moore.
Yeehaw, boys and girls. Thank you so much. Glad to be back. It was nice, though, last week. Grandpa's 90th birthday barbecue. It was something else. And Rusty Simpre at the beach. We just left all the special people here at the WNRN station to watch out for us. Let me give a thanks to the Harrisonburg folks listening on 95.1. Always nice to have you listening. And a shout out to Blue Ridge Graphics. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and online, brgtshirts.com. All right, lots of action in here today. Let's test the microphones with our guests. Deborah?
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Deborah Murray.
Thanks for having us.
The Southern Environmental Law Center. And over here, it's Mary Rose Pratt. Mary Rose, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Yay! I'm always happy when the mixer microphones work. They just don't seem to like me for some reason. They're like teenagers. Do their thing when they feel like it and close the door and don't when they don't feel like it. All right. Deborah Murray, Mary Rose Pratt, attorneys at the Southern Environmental Law Center here in Charlottesville. That's the Virginia/Tennessee part of it. Is that right?
It's our headquarters in Charlottesville, but we have several different offices. And in the Charlottesville office, we cover the states of Virginia and Tennessee. But we also have offices in North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama now, and Washington, D.C.
It just seems weird that it's Virginia/Tennessee and not most of us think north or south. It would be Virginia, Maryland if you had that, or Virginia, North Carolina. I just always find that unusual that it's the Tennessee/branch. But they're nice folks, too.
Good folks.
Except for their University of Tennessee football team. But we're not talking about them today. Today we're going to talk about oil, offshore drilling from Louisiana to Virginia. Deborah Murray and Mary Rose Pratt involved in at least one, but actually probably more than one lawsuit that Southern Environmental Law Center has going in our nation's court system. Let's start. I think we're gonna spend a lot of time today on the BP oil spill in the Gulf, because that sort of that's the big. The big note that lets us get everywhere else. What does Southern Environmental Law Center have going in terms of lawsuits that are involved in this?
We have, I'd say, maybe about three separate actions. The first one is a lawsuit under a law called the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, that is challenging the formal Minerals Management Service, which is the agency that regulates offshore drilling, for failing to comply with NEPA when authorizing offshore operations like the BP well. So that's the first one. The second one is the moratorium that you've heard so much about. This was this six-month moratorium that the federal government put in place to allow time to investigate what went wrong and identify what regulations, environmental and safety regulations, need to be in place to allow offshore drilling to go forward in a safe manner. And in the oil industry had challenged that moratorium. We intervened in that lawsuit to help defend the moratorium. And then the third lawsuit is not quite a lawsuit yet. We've formally notified BP of our intent to hold them accountable for violating the Endangered Species Act, for failing to do what that law requires to prevent harm to the endangered species in the Gulf that have been harmed as a result of the spill and the use of dispersants.
So all of these seem to be, and I guess based on the name, these are not lawsuits for the people. These are lawsuits for the people's environment and the people's creatures in the environment. Is that right?
Yes. They are lawsuits designed to get at the environmental impacts, but of course environmental impacts are closely tied with the people. So it's a little bit hard to, but no, we are not seeking monetary damages, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, because that's what seems to have made the news, is what are the dollar amounts that will go to the folks in Louisiana who have lost their ability to fish, the folks who have lost their business income because of the spills, etc.
Correct. And we are a nonprofit environmental law organization, so our lawsuits are, of course, geared towards environmental issues.
Really, nonprofit. Being in Charlottesville, I'm familiar with SELC, Southern Environmental Law Center, and I've had folks in the past on to discuss several of these issues. Deborah, you were on once before. I've had, and I know I'm going to get his name wrong, Cale Jeffrey.
Jaffe, yes.
Cale Jaffe, see? So sorry.
Very close.
to talk about coal-related issues. But I had no idea that the institution was nonprofit. How do you come up with what lawsuits to bring forth?
Well, we have a board, of course, that advises us and has to approve particular litigation. And then we also have, as just part of our organization's mission, that we work in certain states in the Southeast and that we work on particular issues. And those are broadly defined as forests, public lands, air quality, coastal, energy efficiency and transportation issues. And a variety of related to that.
Well, let's jump right into that. You talk about area states that you represent. By the way, it is 11:08 here on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm Rick Moore. We have Mary Rose Pratt, an attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center, as is Deborah Murray. We're here talking about oil, oil spills, oil drilling in our area, Virginia to Louisiana. You represent, there is an office of the SELC in Alabama.
A new office, brand new, yes.
And for many people, it's Alabama was included in the easily damaged states and environmental wetlands, et cetera, by the BP oil spill. What's been done by SELC in that instance?
Well, really, that's why we got into the litigation that Mary Rose described, because of our concern about Alabama and the Eastern Gulf, and I'm sure many people saw on television the oil on Dauphin Island off the coast of Alabama, and so it's of great concern to us.
But Mary Rose, I can go out there and pick up all the oil in little balls that's come forward and just pick it up off the sand, and, you know, not quite as easily as that makes it sound, but that's all it is, right? Little oil balls washing up on the sand, and if I watch where I'm stepping, I don't get tar heels like you could get in the old days on Outer Banks, and that's it.
Well, not really. There are two responses to that. One, that the oil is getting also into the wetlands and the marshlands, and that is very difficult to clean up and is having very significant adverse impacts on that part of the ecosystem. The other piece is that there's a tremendous amount of oil as a result of this spill that has been pushed below the surface, and that's become a huge concern that because of the unprecedented use of these things called dispersants, much of the oil has been put into the water column or even is settling out on the ocean floor and not reaching up to shore in these tar balls that are so easy to remove. And that amount of oil and what it's doing underwater and in the marine ecosystem is something that has raised a lot of concerns, and that is something that we're not going to really know what kind of impact it's having for quite a while.
Out of sight is not the answer,
right?
In other words.
But didn't we just find out in the last handful of days that there was an underwater plume? I mean,
yes.
That's my memory of being the headline news reader, mm-hmm. That Woods Oceanographic Institute discovered that you couldn't even see it. There was an underwater plume that you can't even see, but trust me, it's there.
Well, they documented it. This was from 10 days of actual data. I'm assuming you're talking about the 22-mile underwater plume.
Oil that I can't see.
That you can't see because it was at 3,000 feet below the surface. But 22 miles, as some newspapers have called it, the length of Manhattan, the same size, at its greatest, a mile wide, and about 650 feet tall. And that was over a 10-day period of actual survey data. Then a hurricane came along, and so they backed out of there. And the plume was very near the wellhead, and of course it would be somewhere else by now, but I think the critical point is that it shows that the oil was not being degraded or dispersed as quickly as the federal investigative agencies have been saying, and that's partly, as I understand it, due to the colder temperatures. And so, you know, that more directly also has bearing on the report that came out from the government a couple of weeks ago about how much oil is gone and how much is still remains.
But there's so much more gone because of the dispersants.
Well,
right?
No.
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 Okay.
This is the report that came out August 4th from the government. And basically, they broke it down into a pie chart and said that, you know, we think 20%, 26% of the oil still remains. 25% was recovered from the wellhead, at the wellhead. 25% roughly dissolved or naturally evaporated, and 25% was dispersed either naturally or through the dispersants chemically. And so reports went out that, oh, well, that means 75% roughly is gone. Well, first of all, even under the government's estimate, the 25% that has dispersed doesn't mean it's gone. It means simply that it's broken up into smaller droplets of oil. But as the report recognizes, that is still toxic to vulnerable species. It's still oil. It hasn't disappeared. And beyond that, a couple of reports came out earlier this week disputing the report from the federal government. One, it wasn't based on actual data. It was based on assumptions that don't apply, including an oil spill at the surface as opposed to the 5,000 feet below water. And so some of the scientific reports, including peer review report from the University of Georgia, say just the opposite, that in fact 75% of the oil is still out there. And even if you accept the government's rosy picture of 50% or even, let's say, 75%, if you even take 75% as being gone, which is not what the government is saying, that still leaves you with about 1.3 million gallons of oil that's still out there, which is five times the size of what the Exxon Valdez spill was. So under anybody's calculation, we still have too much oil out there.
We are talking about oil and oil spills, and we will be getting to offshore drilling in a moment. Two attorneys from Charlottesville's Office of the Southern Environmental Law Center. Dial us up if you have a question. We'll be taking calls in just a moment. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free number. And then WNRN Studio, you can reach us with your instant message. WNRN Studio is an AOL AOL address. And we're talking about currently about the BP oil spill in the Gulf. I think one of the interesting phrases that I found on the SELC website was this era of lax federal oversight. Somebody tell me a little bit about that. Mary Rose?
Sure. One of the things that we did following the oil spill was to start asking questions about how this operation was authorized, you know, what to really figure out what went wrong. And one of the things we found was that the federal government, or the former agency that was the Minerals Management Service, that now has been changed to the Bureau of Ocean Management Regulation and Enforcement, I believe, that it had been authorizing these projects under something called a categorical exclusion, which is something under the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA. NEPA requires the federal government to look at the environmental impacts and to prepare an environmental impact statement for any federal action that is likely to have a significant impact on the environment.
How long does that sort of thing take? We're talking weeks, months, years.
Probably about a year. It really depends on the project.
Because that's why always people don't want to do that, is because
right.
they get their idea and then all the government paperwork and stuff takes forever.
Mm-hmm.
So you say 1 year for this sort of thing.
Well, 1 year, and the other thing about offshore drilling is that it is regulated in a series of steps. So the first step is this big thing called a five-year plan, where the federal government identifies which areas will be leased and when they will be leased to the oil companies for oil and gas exploration and development. The second stage is to hold the lease sale, and then the other stages are exploration and development. So at each stage, the federal government has to comply with NEPA, but they can do a broad environmental impact statement at this five-year stage, and then sort of smaller, shorter environmental reviews at subsequent stages. But what we found is that when it came to the exploration and development stage, the government was using this thing called a categorical exclusion, which is supposed to be used for either operations that individually or cumulatively would not have any impact or not likely to have any significant impact on the environment. And as we found, the exploration, the BP exploration operation, obviously had the potential to have a significant impact on the environment. And so that the federal government was misusing these things called categorical exclusions. But what was even more alarming is that after the BP spill happened, the federal government continued to authorize new deep water well exploration activities using that categorical exclusion, or essentially the waiver from the environmental review that is required under NEPA. And that was the basis of one of our lawsuits, is that the continued use of that environmental waiver.
One of the things that made the news so much was that it wasn't just that they weren't doing their job or weren't doing their job as originally planned and designed, was that they were partying while doing their job. Is that correct?
That's our understanding.
Right.
Yes.
So did that... Can we blame them for what happened? Because that's all everybody wants to do. They want to blame somebody. In fact, my memory, very poor memory, as I've already proven, is that BP, that's the name attached to the oil spill. It has several different names that have made it through the news media, but BP is the one that is now permanently linked. But there are some other people, some other businesses that were also part of this, correct?
Yes, there were. Of course, there's Transocean, and then there's the
Halliburton.
They seem to get away with everything.
Well,
I seem to have visions in my head of like of movies that will one day be made about everything that went on back room to keep Halliburton out of the news for all the nasty, evil things that they've done.
Well, and there's been lots of finger pointing in this particular round, and I won't say you're wrong.
But yeah, just to get back to the lax oversight, again, one of the other things is that we heard about in the news was these oil spill response plans, and the ones that BP had and that a number of other large oil and gas companies had in the Gulf identified things like walruses as species to look out for. When they were, you know, when a spill happened, and that those plans were, you know, written by the oil companies and checked off by the federal government as, okay, you're all set to, you know, go out and explore, and you have a response plan in place in case something goes wrong.
So basically cutting and pasting from plans from
apparently the
Arctic, unless they know something that we don't know.
Well, somebody did a lot of work one time, and we'll just cut and paste their quality work from before. 11:22 on the wake-up call, we have attorneys Deborah Murray, senior attorney Mary Rose Pratt, and associate attorney from the Southern Environmental Law Center, as we talk about oil spills, offshore drilling, up in just a moment. 979-0919-1877-WNRN Rocks. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms today. Highs in the upper 80s. Cloudy with a 50% chance of showers tonight. Lows 65 to 70. And then partly cloudy tomorrow. 20% chance of showers. Highs in the mid 80s. Pretty nice out there today. Some clouds. 81 in the valley. 78 in Lynchburg. 81 in Richmond. 79 in Charlottesville.
Sunday morning wake-up call brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank RelayFoods.com for our support today. They serve Charlottesville and Richmond. RelayFoods.com is the place to go for locally grown food and groceries from your favorite local stores and restaurants. You can order until midnight. It'll be ready by 3 p.m. the next day. Shopping done. RelayFoods.com lets you save time, beat traffic, and get the food you need from sources you know and trust. That's RelayFoods.com. And as you all know, there's lots of radio stations and other music sources out there, but there's only one that brings you a program like The Wake Up Call. And the only reason we can do this is because of listeners like Donna Rigney, Gene McCusker, and Ann Evans, all who supported it during the fund drive this past spring. It's also because of program underwriters like the ones you're hearing from this hour, as well as Mel's Cafe and Greenbrier Animal Hospital. So stay tuned, tell a friend about The Wake Up Call and other programming you enjoy on WNRN, and be sure to support us in the upcoming fund drive this September, or head online WNRN.org to see how you can help now. All right, back in action with our guests, Deborah and Mary Rose from Southern Environmental Law Center. And I believe we have a call. Michelle, are you there?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much. Question, comment?
Yes. Thank you for a great topic, Rick, and good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
I admit that I am an idealist, and this whole idea of the oil spurting out is just nauseating to me. And when they talked about, I forget the brand name of this person, I laughed out loud because it's just such a fantasy name.
Coexit, I think.
Or Coexit, yeah.
What was it?
Coexit, I think.
And it's just, I'm an animal lover, you know, wild and, you know, called home pets and all. And the whole idea of this, you know, my one quick back to Valdez situation, I thought, well, why aren't all the tankers double-hulled? I mean, better safe than sorry. And back to the Gulf of Mexico, it just, you know, I know that they rush through these things and it's slap happy and they're on, you know, these programs that they're pushing to get, you know, all these target dates met and everything, and they kind of let things slide. I've worked in a big factory. I know how it goes there, and I'm sure it's rampant everywhere. And I'm wondering, as I said, being an idealist, and hoping that some kind of, for lack of knowing what term to use, water scrubbing process can come out of this, whether it's Kevin Costner magic whirly bird thing that he has, which sounded good. But in the long run, I would really hope that out of someone taking an altruistic overview to this whole disaster and knowing that there are more to come, that we could try and get somebody in the country interested in the idea of desalinating water, because it's always a major problem when there's floods and hurricanes and, you know, things such as this. You know, so beyond the critters, back to the people and the fact that we're going to, I think, probably fight wars over water in the future. So maybe this could be put into part of it somehow. So,
all right, Michelle, let me let the guests talk about it. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Well, I think in the long run, we need to try to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels. That's one of the lessons that we hope that we're all becoming aware of as a result of the BP spill. And, you know, this is the worst environmental disaster in this nation's history, and it's the world's largest accidental oil spill. And if you look, we remember back, those of us who are old enough, to the Santa Barbara oil spill back in 69 and what that led to. It really started to spur the whole environmental movement and then a series.
I hate to put you on the spot, but explain what that led to.
What, the Santa Barbara?
I'm too ignorant to know what that led to.
Earth Day 1970,
okay,
and
right,
a whole slew of environmental laws, including NEPA in 1969, 1972, the Clean Water Act, 1970, the Clean Air Act.
And it was a tanker or a...
It was a platform.
A platform.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that I think that raised such a furor. It was such a iconic thing back in those days that it really made a difference. Out of tragedy, we gained some good. And personally, I'm concerned that we haven't been able to pass anything in Congress yet.
Boy, we just now stopped, got the thing sealed up. I mean, wasn't the first image, the first action to get the spill to stop, and then you can look back on it within the next 365 and do from there? Did that not happen the same way with Santa Barbara?
Well, just as a clarification, of course, it's not completely sealed yet. As I understand, the latest information is that BP will be doing the final sealing of the well sometime after Labor Day, but hopefully we are close. But, of course, this summer, Congress was considering legislation to close the gaps on some of the lax environmental review, the incentives that allow this kind of risky deep water drilling without looking adequately at the impacts. The House passed an okay bill. It was a good start forward, but of course Senator Reid, you know, they left for the August recess because he didn't think he had the votes to pass similar legislation.
All right. Our guest today, Deborah Murray and Mary Rose Pratt from the Southern Environmental Law Center, as we talk about oil spill, offshore oil drilling. And let's take a call. We have Todd from Crozet. Hi, Todd.
Good morning. I'm born in Pensacola, Florida. Grew up fishing in the Gulf. Love seafood. Always thought that the state of Louisiana sold their coast out to oil. Said that this could never have ever happen. Just can't let it happen. But then it happened. Fine. Here it is. And I wanted to say the Southern Environmental Law Group, keep them straight. My comment is, what an irony that Obama and all who I support is up there, you know, and talking about losing sleep and can't rest until the well gets capped and yada, 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 and all this and that. And the irony of it all is that we've got to have a group like Southern Environmental keep the government, who you would just think would no way not do what they're supposed to do in this scenario. I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Ladies, what has the current administration, not the Senate and the House, what has the president done, attempted to get done since the oil spill has happened? Well, anything environmentally strong?
I'd like to back up before the oil spill at about 3 weeks before the oil spill.
So early April.
So early April, actually, to be precise, the 31st of March. And President Obama announced what his plans were going to be for opening up areas, new areas to offshore drilling. The former President Bush had proposed to open up the entire Atlantic, some parts of additional parts of Alaska off the Arctic, and some parts of the Pacific coast. President Obama said that he was going to continue the policy of going forward with the lease sale to allow for bids off the coast of Virginia to allow exploration for oil and gas off the coast of Virginia, and to also open up for the first time the rest of the mid and South Atlantic up to Florida, but not allow drilling in the North Atlantic. So we, of course, are very concerned about, and that was just 3 weeks before the oil spill. Since then, basically, the president has put on hold. He temporarily has canceled, but Reid postponed the Virginia lease sale, as well as moving forward in the new areas has also been postponed. Otherwise, so that's, we still have this, what we think is an ill-advised policy of going forward with these new areas. Ill-advised because of the risk, ill-advised because there's, according to the government estimates, very little oil out there. So not enough to justify the risk.
Who said there's very little oil out there?
The government.
Which government?
I mean,
I'm sure not the local, but are we talking about?
We're talking about the federal government,
for
what was then the Minerals Management Service and what is now the new agency. Granted, the data is old, but it's the best data that they have, and it's also data the same. It's of the same era as the data for the North Atlantic, where the Obama administration said one of the reasons they weren't going to go forward there was because of the very little potential for recoverable oil.
And just to add a little bit of specifics to that, the Mid and South Atlantic regions combined would last, according to the government, about 3 months worth of oil and about 10 months worth of natural gas at current rates of U.S. consumption. So less than, I mean, just months at most.
And the Virginia sale, which is the first specific off on the chopping block, so to speak, would be 6 days worth of oil. So not very much. But beyond that, in the wake of the spill, as I say, there's been the postponement of the Virginia sale. We have the moratoria that Mary Rose mentioned on deep water drilling in the Gulf. The federal agency in charge of the National Environmental Policy Act overall regulations is looking into the issue of the, you know, the free ride, the waiver of environmental reviews, and most recently has said that at least temporarily, they're going to take public comment period, but temporarily, no more categorical exclusion, no more environmental waivers for deep water drilling, that they're going to require an environmental assessment. And I should just point out that an environmental assessment is, in terms of environmental review, the least stringent and doesn't take that much time. It wouldn't take a year at all. Time frame is more for an environmental impact statement. So it's a step forward, but even that is not going to be very onerous.
Baby steps. 11:36 here on WNRN, Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Rick Moore here with our topic today of oil and offshore drilling, oil spills, et cetera. Two attorneys from the Charlottesville main office, the Southern Environmental Law Center, Deborah Murray, Mary Rose Pratt. Phone number 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support. They are the headquarters for back to school and late summer with a selection of North Face day packs, fleece jackets, and Keen sandals. You can also pick up your tickets for the Radical Reels Film Festival, September 16th at PVCC. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports can be found in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in Charlottesville, the Chesterfield Town Center, and Lexington Commons in Richmond online, BRMS.com. All right, we got a call here. Dewey, where have you been?
Oh, I'm still out here, Rick.
Dewey from Louisa. All right, Dewey, what you got?
I'm just, and this is related, I would think. We as the public really don't have a way of getting in contact when we see environmental concerns. Who do we call? You know, do we have to go straight to the law offices, or can we call to get the ball rolling to bring attention to what we see as environmental concerns, problems? We have quite a few of them out here in Louisa County, I can tell you that. And I sure would like to talk to somebody about that. But first, we've got to have some number we can call or someone we can get in contact with. Any suggestions?
Well, if you're specifically talking about the oil spill and offshore drilling, I'd say it'd be very important if you would like to contact our U.S. senators as a start. Both of our U.S. senators pre-spill were in favor of going forward with offshore drilling off the coast of Virginia. In the wake of the spill, they've said, you know, they want the review of the BP spill in place before going forward, but they haven't changed their basic position.
Well, am I still on here?
You are indeed.
Okay.
Yes,
well,
you are.
What I'm talking about is I understand that where the water flows is going on down the stream. So if I see a problem in Louisa County in an area that someone's polluting the water,
okay,
I certainly know that the water's going, you know, maybe into the Lake Anna. And who do I report to? Who do I call? Do I call my board of supervisors? They're not going to do anything. I want someone that will look into the matter.
I'd call
my local paper. No. I want, is there a government agency or someone that works, I guess, DEQ, but...
All right, Dewey, give him a chance.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
Yes, I would call the State Department of Environmental Quality. That would be a good starter.
Do they have any funds left anymore? I mean, I say that in some sort of snarky question, but truly, if you want to call to get your pothole fixed, it doesn't do any good because the Transportation Department doesn't have any money. Does it do any good to call the Department of the Transportation of Quality? Any good for somebody who's letting their cows poop in the stream, or somebody who's throwing out their paint? That's where they're washing their paint cans at the end of their day. Does that truly do any good?
Well, that's another matter. On cows in the streams, you know, those are voluntary best management practices of trying to fence them out, and that's a real issue. Very hard to address that systematically. But if there is a significant pollution incident, I think the best bet is to contact DEQ and try to get somebody to come out and inspect. Of course, you can always email our organization if it's something that we think we could advise on. We're happy to, but you know, of course, we can't take on every problem.
All right, 11:40 here on the Wake Up Call. 979-0919. Actually, dial us out. Dial us in on the toll free line for a few minutes. 1-877-WNRN rocks.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
All right. Allegations of workplace bullying swirl in the wake of the suicide of Virginia Quarterly Review's managing editor. What really happened in the weeks leading up to his death? Local renegade farmer Joel Salatin suggests many of America's food restrictions on local organic foods should be lifted. Read about it in The Hook. And did you know President James Madison preferred French wallpaper? The Hook, helping your education with a new issue every Thursday. And WNRN reminds you that Piedmont Virginia Community College's fall semester classes begin on Monday. That's tomorrow. You can prepare for a new career, update your job skills, or save thousands starting your bachelor's degree. You can get more info and register online at pvcc.edu or on the phone 434-977-3900. Again, semester begins tomorrow. You can shine at PVCC. And a big shout out to Sugar Snap. They offer gently used baby and kids items, including shoes and hats, plus maternity and nursing clothes. Also at Sugar Snap, you'll find cloth diapers, diaper bags, nursery gear, and locally made items. There's a kid-friendly play area available while you shop. You can become a fan of Sugar Snap on Facebook or Twitter, and you can find them at 480 Shoppers World Court. All right, back with our topic today. We are talking about oil and offshore drilling with our guests, Deborah Murray and Mary Rose Pratt from the Southern Environmental Law Center. Ladies, somebody brought up, and I don't remember, I think it might have been Todd, talking about seafood. Can we really eat this? Because you've heard from many people, oh, you should never eat that, and other people said, I would never sell you anything that was bad, and who is testing this to make sure that you should or should not eat it? Mary Rose?
And I can tell you what I know. I'm not an expert on this, but I know that I believe it's one of the federal government agencies has been testing the seafood. So they've been going through a series of tests, and I think the first one that you've heard about is first they smell the seafood, and then they move on to more in-depth testing to test for oil contamination and also the dispersants. And from what I've heard on the news, that, you know, they are certifying that the seafood so far that has been recovered is safe to eat.
By smelling it?
Well, and that's the first,
I mean, if it doesn't smell oily, then you move on?
If it doesn't smell, then they go on to the next more in
depth. Are they using,
like,
oily, hair shampoo to clean it up?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, if it does smell oily, then they'll throw it out. So that's they don't have to go into the more in-depth test. But if it doesn't, then they move on and do further testing to certify it.
I mean, I grew up eating seafood. I grew up in an old fishing town. We had seafood 3 or 4 nights a week. And now I feel like, especially since I don't know who caught it anymore, when I was there, we got it from Mr. Williams crabs, or we got, Mr. Inslee's trout or something. And now if I want to buy it around here, I just don't know anymore. Is SELC involved in any way in food? Because I know you're involved in wetlands, but does that play over into food in any way?
Not really. We really are not directly involved in that aspect of this tragedy at all. I think one thing to add, though, is that in addition to sort of the concerns about the food that's coming out, or that fishermen are catching now, is what's going to happen in the next couple of years as a result of the spill. So even if the mature fish that are being caught now have not been impacted, the younger stages that are out in the Gulf, the larvae stages, which are much more sensitive to dispersants or oil, may be being killed off. And we'll find out in the next 2 or 3 years when those juveniles would be mature, are not around, that the commercial fisheries have really been dealt a real blow. For example, in the wake of the Exxon Valdez spill, it took 3 years for the herring fishing. Was it? No.
I think the herring fishing hasn't actually come back in 20 years.
It took 3 years for it to collapse, and now it hasn't come back since. So that's a concern about this incident as well.
All right, we got a caller.
Hello,
who we got?
This is Jerry.
Jerry, fire away with your question.
I was listening to your radio program. It's a good one. And you were talking about the NEPA documentation and things like that. Am I to understand that NEPA documentation deals only with environmental issues and has nothing to do with actual well construction and things like that, which has obviously caused the failure? A second point I'd like to ask is in relationship to the East Coast, Virginia on down south, opening it up to exploration development. You said that you're dealing with old data, and that's correct, because there's been a moratorium on exploration. And so, maybe we got 6 months on this old data of supply, but open it up to exploration. Let's figure on out what we got out there, and it's benign sort of thing. Nobody's drilling anything. Other than that, that's all the comment I have. Oh, by the way, you mentioned Santa Barbara 40 years ago. How is Santa Barbara today? And I'm going to hang on up and turn my radio back on, and do enjoy your show.
Thanks, man.
I'll just start, and Mary Rose can fill in, but just want to point out that the BP oil spill was for exploration, so it wasn't production. So, yes, I would say we don't want to open up Virginia to offshore exploration. It's very risky. And I don't know actually how Santa Barbara is doing at the moment.
And as you know, also, you know, even if 6 months is old data, you know, the estimate of 6 months worth of oil or is based on old data. I mean, even if that is off by 50%, then what you get in maybe a year, that's still just very insignificant amount of oil and gas for the tremendous risk that moving forward with that action would be, when we have alternatives, when we should be investing in ways to reduce the amount of oil we use in the first place and investing in renewable energy and clean energy to move us forward to, you know, create a sustainable clean energy future, not something that's going to last us 1 year.
Well, that gives me two questions. Is if that was all the oil and natural gas that was out there, how can that possibly be enough to overcome the expenses that an oil company would have to invest to make it worthwhile?
Well, there I think we're speculating, but as the caller pointed out, there had been, of course, a moratorium in effect for over 25 years. And if companies were to bid on the proposed Virginia sale, if it is to go forward, I would guess it would be basically to get their foot in the door. But you know, that's purely speculation on my part.
All right. We are talking with Mary Rose Pratt and Deborah Murray from the Charlottesville office of the Southern Environmental Law Center, talking about oil and offshore drilling. Dial us up with your question. It is 11:50 here on Sunday Morning's Wake Up Call with Rick Moore. 979-0919 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me take a moment and thank Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro for their support. They feature male and female tattoo artists. Ben Around Tattoos has thousands of designs available and can create work from a design you provide. Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro or at 701 West Main Street here in Charlottesville. For more information, go online, benaroundtattoos.com. Ladies, a conversation that I had in my homework to get ready for today's show was Americans want cheap oil. They want cheap oil. They want cheap gasoline. Everything fuel-wise needs to be inexpensive as possible. Doesn't that lead to acceptable oil spills? If you want one, you're probably going to have the other.
Well, one thing I would add is the only reason, or one of the reasons, that oil is so cheap is because we don't factor in the other costs of going after that oil. We don't factor in the cost to the environment, the cost to the wetlands and the shores and all of the other things that come along with oil and gas exploration are not factored into the price that we pay at the pump.
Yeah, and I think another point is that when President Obama took office, he made it very clear that he was not in favor of a drill-only approach and that we needed to move to clean energy alternative and alternative fuels. And going forward in new areas, opening up new areas like the Mid and South Atlantic, locks us in to, you know, a considerable period of time where we're still dependent on fossil fuels, and we need to transition out of that.
Can I ask, cheap oil, cheap fuel, how my guests got here today? What kind of car do you drive?
I got here by running.
You did not.
I did, too.
She did.
I did, with my little backpack.
And I rode my bike.
All right, so people who are against all this can't pick on the two of you for not living up to what you claim. One of the other things in my homework preparation was that there are more tanker spills of equal or greater average fuel release than there are platform or drilling spills. So aren't we already doing a good job?
Well, I'm not familiar with the tanker statistics, but that doesn't say to me that we're doing a good job. That just says to me that the whole process from beginning to end is pretty risky. And also, going back to the question of, well, aren't oil spills acceptable if we're going to have cheap oil prices? And, you know, they really aren't. From the people who lost their lives in this particular spill to the long-term damage to the environment. I don't think any of the families of the 11 people who were killed would say it would be worth the risk.
Yeah, that's gotten overlooked a lot, hasn't it? I mean, and shameful, then I can probably be put in that incredibly large group. But they've been overlooked a lot in terms of one of the negative outcomes of this oil spill. Does anybody know what, you know, is there a total number of deaths from this sort of, you know, from platform spills? Does each spill have a human death that goes with it? Do you know?
No, there are definitely a lot more spills than there are ones that were this significant that led to lives lost. But that doesn't mean that there haven't been accidents on offshore rigs and other operations in the past that haven't led to injuries or deaths. I'm not aware of the, or I don't know offhand the specific statistics, but I know that it has happened.
Early on in the program, again today, Deborah Murray, Mary Rose Pratt from Charlottesville's office of the Southern Environmental Law Center. Just about 5 minutes left. Dial us up if you have a question or a comment. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. You talked about holding British Petroleum accountable for the effects that have been put on the wetlands, etc. Can you tell me what your goals are for that?
Really, our lawsuit is about holding them accountable for the effects on the endangered species, for violating the Endangered Species Act. And our goal is to hold them accountable for that harm and have them restore the species that have been injured or lost. But the other thing that we're working on in terms of holding BP accountable is advocating with a number of groups in Congress to repeal the $75 million liability cap that's in place right now that limits their liability for the damage from the oil spill.
I would also add that Mary Rose mentioned at the beginning the three lawsuits that we're involved in, one of which is challenging the environmental review waiver, the categorical exclusion, and the fact that even after the BP spill that there were drilling applications that were approved and categorical exclusions used, and one of those was for a BP well. So
I think more than one of them.
So that's another way, of course, to hold all the oil companies accountable, is by not just exempting them from environmental review.
All right, 11:57 here on the wake-up call. You can probably hear the buzz in the background, too. There's a power outage here at WNRN, and we're working off the generator. So thankfully we have a generator. Unthankfully, it's decided to buzz until it gets its shakes out. 11:57 here on the wake-up call. Just a few minutes left with our guest today, talking about oil and offshore spilling. Ladies, we started the program talking about the Minerals Management Services federal agency that was part of the claimed oversight. So they've changed names, right? And what procedures have they changed so that this sort of thing doesn't happen again, whether it happens, whether there's allowance to drill off Virginia's coast or not?
Really, all they've done so far is sort of change the name and rearrange, I guess, the chairs on the deck of the Titanic, if you will. The Secretary of Interior Salazar has renamed the agency and said that he would separate some of its functions, so separate the functions of leasing, the functions of collecting revenues or royalties from the drilling, and the functions of environmental and safety review. So before, they were all in the same agency. They still are in the same agency, but apparently are supposed to be separated into separate divisions to help remove some of the inherent conflicts and having the same person in charge of collecting revenue for something that they're supposed to be regulating in terms of making sure it's environmentally and otherwise safe. So again, all that's happened so far is a renaming and sort of changing the official titles on the doors of that agency moving forward, but nothing real specific in terms of changing the process for everything.
So it sounds like SELC will continue to have lots to do. Just
yes.
From this one instance.
Yes.
All right. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Ladies, last comments before we turn it over to Drew Thompson and Les Thames Perdue.
Thanks very much for having us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Deborah Murray and Mary Rose Pratt from the Southern Environmental Law Center. Thank you so much. You can go online and catch this show as a podcast if you're joining us late at SeavillePodcast.com. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.